Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the sound, it's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning into the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, have you heard of Bankwell? Bankwell recently announced its Bankwell Pet Adoption Project to create awareness about the many dogs and cats in need of homes at animal shelters throughout Fairfield and New Haven counties. So we'll open today not only talking with a rep from Bankwell, but we'll learn how your participation is helping with a representative from the Connecticut Humane Society and the Animal Haven Rescue Organization. Then we'll talk about the arts and focus on the potential cuts to the National Endowment for the Arts with Connecticut's Director of Culture. We'll also focus on a brand new initiative to help connect arts groups with exhibit, practice, and performance spaces through the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County and its Space Finder program. And we'll close with a serious conversation that could save your life. March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, so we'll hear some critical information and good advice about preventing colorectal cancer and how you can protect yourself and your loved ones with an expert from Pro Health Physicians of Farmington. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. New England Young at Heart Service Network is aimed to guide the elderly and their caretakers to enrich their lives with purpose and meaning. And New England Young at Heart's 2017 Senior Prom for those 50 and older is coming up on Wednesday, May 10th at Aria Banquet Facility in Prospect. Dance the afternoon away with Tony Fordo singing doo-wop and a cappella and enjoy a full banquet from apps to dessert plus a cash bar. Come dressed up or dressed down. Tickets are on sale now at $23 with a portion of the proceeds being donated to Team in Derby for elderly program support. For information or to reserve your tickets, respond by April 21st to 203-887-5047 or click on neyoungatheart.org. Regular listeners to the program know that we love talking about pets and promoting pet adoption and responsible pet ownership. So we're pleased to have a room full of fellow pet lovers in the room in the studio with us this morning. As part of an ongoing effort to provide value to the community, Bankwell has announced it's launched the Bankwell Pet Adoption Project. It started March 1st, and it's creating awareness about the many dogs and cats in need of homes at animal shelters throughout Fairfield and New Haven counties. They're also working to benefit the Connecticut Humane Society, and we've got representatives from that agency as well as one of the animal shelters that is going to be getting some co-promotion from this event. Linda Marino is in the studio with us. She's president of Animal Haven Rescue of North Haven. And Susan Walschlager is with us. She's the marketing and communications manager for the Connecticut Humane Society. We'll talk to them shortly. But first, we want to hear from David Dineen. He is the executive vice president and head of community building for Bankwell. David, great to meet you. Thanks for joining us. Pull the microphone right up there and tell us a little bit more about how this whole thing started.
Sure. Terrific, John. Good morning. And it's great to be here, and it's great to be with our partners, Linda and Susan, too. It's been a great kickoff to our pet adoption program. The idea really came out of our executive assistant, Lynn Gomez. We, in our branches, like to sponsor local artists and have different displays and do different things with our space to bring the community in. And we talked about the need to do pet adoption type programs. And that's really how the program started. So we quickly went to work and thought the spring would be a great time to develop our pet adoption program. And we partnered with a great local photographer, Michael Bagley, who donated his time and effort to take pictures from local shelters of the dogs that are in need of adoption. So we're very focused on the communities that we serve. And we just thought it would be a great way to reach out to the communities and the shelters and try and pair up some of these great pets with their new families.
So what was the lead up to this aside from getting the photographer? And so this photographer was fanning out and taking pictures of some of these animals, and their photos are appearing in your branches to kind of put names to the face for your clients.
Correct. Michael's a local photographer. He does focus on pets, and you know, does all kind of photography. And then Lynn, who really created the idea around our pet adoption program, has also built little biographies around each of the pets, working with each of the shelters. So if you go into any of our branches and see the pictures, which Michael has a unique way of really bringing these kind of the vision of these pets to life in his pictures. And then Lynn has done a great job telling a little story about each pet.
And excuse the pun, but this initiative has kind of grown legs and has developed sort of a side initiative for the Humane Society.
It has. You know, we're very focused. We have 9 branches throughout Fairfield and New Haven County. We're very focused on the communities that we serve. And so we've reached out to participating shelters in those communities, along with the Connecticut Humane Society. We've also decided to open up our coin counting machines in our branches for free. And anyone that comes into our branch to count their coin will match the donation back to the Connecticut Humane Society. We also have a great partner with Pet Pantry, who has set up collection bins in their locations to get collection of items needed for these shelters.
Excellent. And you have a number of partners. I'm sure folks that are listening, especially throughout Southern Connecticut and Fairfield County, have heard or helped support Animal Haven, Roar, Star Relief, and Pet Assistance. They've been on this program, as has the Stamford Animal Shelter, Red Leash Rescue, Strays and Others, Little Black Dog Rescue, One More Dog Rescue, Sunshine Golden Retriever, and, of course, the Connecticut Humane Society, all part of this initiative. And we're pleased, as we move the microphone, and David will be back to talk to you one more time to let people know how to learn more and get involved. But we want to talk to Linda Marino from Animal Haven Rescue in North Haven. So, Linda, this initiative is pretty fresh on the start, but you do have a good idea that this is going to bring you some great benefits.
This is a tremendously beneficial to our shelter because it is so, so very important to us to spread the word and raise awareness regarding adoption. And also, we look for any opportunity to spread the word regarding Animal Haven. We want to spread the word in our own communities and beyond, and Bankwell's project is enabling us to do that. We received an email from Lucy French a few weeks ago telling us about this project, and we jumped at the chance to get involved. We're always looking for opportunities to raise awareness regarding adoption.
So tell us, what's the situation over at your shelter? I talk to folks and get emails and calls very often, and I guess a lot of these shelters are really kind of bursting at the seams.
We are always, John, bursting at the seams, and it really is heartbreaking to us when we have to refuse entry to an animal. We're a no-kill shelter, so the animals stay with us until they are adopted. So that means we can't always take everybody in. And so we really, really, really want to increase adoption awareness and spread the geographical scope of awareness of our shelter, because the more animals we can adopt out, the more animals we can adopt in. And that's completely aligned. That is our mission, and that's what we're trying to accomplish.
So tell me a little bit about the population that you are currently seeing at the Animal Haven Rescue in North Haven. Dogs and cats almost exclusively?
Yes, we only take in dogs and cats, and we have about 60 cats right now and about 20 dogs. We have runs for 19 dogs, and we have a cage cat room for about 34 cats and a community room for about 15. Overflow goes in our garage, which we made it so that we can house kittens in kitten season, because the population really does become overwhelming.
Excellent. So walk us quickly through the process of what a Bankwell client might experience if they see one of these lovely pets to be and comes to your shelter for taking one home.
Well, our shelter is at 89 Mill Road in North Haven. We've been there since 1948. And so you'll come to our property, which one doesn't really expect it to be where it's located because it's in the middle of a residential area. But we have 7 acres of land, or 7 to 9 acres of land. And you'll come to our shelter. You'll be greeted by our staff. And you will be, if it's a cat, you'll be able to go into our caged cat room and community room and visit with the cats and see if there's one that calls to you. And our dogs are brought out to you when you're, if you're interested in any particular dog. You then go through an application process. And in a couple of days, you'll find out whether you've been approved, and then you'll come and pick up your wonderful family companion at our shelter.
Great. I know a lot of places also have collateral services to help both support and enhance the pet ownership experience post-shelter. Is that the case with Animal Haven?
Well, our staff is available to answer questions. We do ask people to keep in touch with us, and many of our adopters do, and let us know how the pets are doing. We do adoption follow-up calls to make sure everything is going well, and if there are problems, we do our best to address them.
And if pet owners, pet owners receive that happy call of approval, do they have to anticipate significant level of veterinary interaction or equipment or supplies or things like that?
No, all of our pets come fully vetted with all their spayed and neutered. That's part of our policy. We will not adopt out a pet that is not spayed or neutered because of pet overpopulation, and they have their shots. Sometimes, because they are in a shelter environment, they might have been exposed to an upper respiratory infection or something along those lines, and when they go home, the stress of a new environment might make something like that flare up, and they might need to see the vet for in that instance.
I see.
But we do try to send them out as healthy as possible,
yeah.
And fully with all their vaccinations and spayed and neutered, for sure.
Excellent. Linda Marino is with Animal Haven, one of the multiple beneficiaries of the Bankwell Pet Adoption Project, just launched in March and will continue for some time throughout Fairfield and New Haven counties, hopefully connecting you to a loving pet for now and the future. We also are welcoming to the studio Susan Walschlager. She's with the Connecticut Humane Society, while we bring the mic back to David. So Susan, thanks for joining us and coming down. Tell us a little bit about we were talking before we went on the air. This could create a great opportunity for a population segment of pets that are very challenged sometimes to be placed, and that's our older adult pets.
Definitely. Well, first, thanks for having me. Happy to be here and happy to be partnering with Bankwell, of course. We hope that this, number one, promotes awareness of the Connecticut Humane Society and making adoption your first option, but also of some of our senior pets that we have. We have a couple dogs right now who are 10 and up, and, you know, of course, the puppies and the kittens, they're, you know, adorable.
High
a lot
appeal.
Of Definitely. They don't, you know, necessarily spend a lot of time there, and they find families very quickly. But some of our seniors, you know, they might be coming with arthritis or, you know, some other complications. But
like
they have they have so much love left to give. And the great thing about adopting a senior pet is they are low key, usually already trained. They know their manners, and they are content to have a, you know, Netflix, you know, marathon with you. Maybe just they want a spot on the couch. They want to be a couch potato with you. So I think, you know, a senior pet is a great option if you don't have the time to be going out for hikes and runs to exercise your dog, you know, a dog who's super active. So we've got senior dogs, senior cats, of course, as well. And it's important to remember we have a lot of other types of animals as well. We have some ferrets who will be available soon at Westport after they have a checkup with our veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
We have several rats right now. And for people who've had them as pets before, they know they are amazing companions. I guess they're, you know, they're very smart. You can train them as well.
I have to put a plug in for the rat, because I owned a Norwegian black hooded rat as a pet myself, and I'll be darned if that rodent was not as responsive and friendly as a dog or a cat. Extremely clean. Folks, you hear there's rats for adoption. Trust me, don't rule them out.
And they're great, you know, if you get them, you know, as a pair, so they have a little buddy.
We're hearing a lot more too about and a proliferation of bird adoptions. I don't know if you folks handle birds at all.
Yep. We had, I think it was 6 finches recently. I think they were adopted in pairs, but tiniest little things. I couldn't believe, you know, they were pets because they were so small, but they found their families relatively quickly.
Yeah.
So we do have birds as well.
Yeah, I think it's also important to reinforce that so many of the animals that probably come to both the Animal Haven Rescue in North Haven and the Connecticut Humane Societies, these are pets from loving homes where there was a challenge, there was a new job, somebody had to move, somebody got sick. These are not all just thrown out onto the street or strays or feral animals. These
right.
are a lot. So many of these pets have already enjoyed the comforts of a loving home.
Absolutely.
And are now thrust into yes. kind of a tense situation. So we need to get more folks out to Bankwell looking at these pictures and counting their coin and helping benefit the cause. Anything else that you want folks to know about the way the Humane Society works, adoptions
yeah.
or anything like that?
Well, the other thing, you were just talking about how, you know, sometimes you are in a difficult life transition or just, you know, struggling for whatever reason financially, and it can be hard to keep up with veterinary care and, you know, buying pet food, especially if your pet needs to have grain-free food or a certain allergy. So for the wish list collection that Bankwell is doing, some of those donations will be going to the pet food pantry that we have at all three of our locations in Westport, Waterford, and Newington. So families who are in a time of need can apply and work with our pet food pantry. So I just wanted to point that out that, you know, we do try to keep pets in their current homes so that they don't have to go through that transition, which can be very challenging for
Great.
Them.
And for anybody who's listening throughout the state that may not be in the proximity of a Bankwell office, certainly you can contact the Humane Society in your region of the state if you'd like to individually donate or either financially or provide bedding or food or other comforts. So is there a website people can go for Central Clearinghouse to contact you?
Definitely. So everyone can visit our website at cthumane.org, where all of our available pets are listed with pictures, profiles, and the ideal home that they're looking for. Our wish list is on there as well, information about our pet food pantry and also about our low-fee public veterinary hospital, which is Fox Memorial Clinic in Newington.
Oh, nice and central to everyone
is.
In Connecticut. Good. Excellent. We want to thank you, Susan Walshlager with the Connecticut Humane Society, and we're going to wrap it up in the last couple minutes that we have, again, with David Dineen, Executive Vice President and the Head of Community Banking for Bankwell. David, once again, for folks that may have joined us in process, give us a quick brief one more time on how they can come to Bankwell and make a difference in the lives of pets and future pet owners here in Connecticut.
Sure, John. Thank you. And Linda and Suzanne, thank you. I think if anything you've heard through this conversation, the need that's out there, and there's some just incredible pets that are ready for adoption. And as a local community bank, we feel we have an obligation and an opportunity to partner with local organizations and kind of use our network to help different organizations like these shelters to get these pets adopted. You can simply go into any one of our 9 branches throughout New Haven and Fairfield County, and you'll see pictures of the pets that are up for adoption. You can go into those branches and donate coin into our coin machines, and we'll make a donation to the Connecticut Humane Society. And I think what's really neat is our website. If you go to mybankwell.com/pleaseadopt, me, you'll see all the pictures of the pets that are up for adoption. And as they get adopted, we'll put a little heart there showing that they're adopted.
Oh,
but
nice.
The stories of these pets are in each of our branches. And reach out to us at our local branches or our website. We'd love to start a conversation and direct you to any of the shelters that we're working with to see if we can get some of these pets homes.
Great. And we can't click the mic off without extending our thanks and appreciation to Lynn Gomez, who worked with Wilton branch manager Ann Mitroni and Lucy French, and also, of course, photographer Michael Begley, for making all these pets look so much so lovable, and hopefully inspiring folks to come out to support this important program. We want to thank you all for coming in studio and helping connect more pets in need to loving homes throughout the state. Well, you may have heard the latest news that President Donald Trump's new national budget plan proposes to eliminate the National Endowment for the Arts, among a number of initiatives. And since we are going to be talking about the arts and actually trying to increase opportunities to connect Connecticut residents to arts activities, we are going to bring in Christina Newman Scott. She's the Director of Culture for the State of Connecticut for a little bit of perspective on that. Christina, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, great. It's great to be with you.
So we chatted for a couple minutes before we turned on the mic. And in fact, shortly after we hang up, you're going to be talking with your colleagues across America.
Yes.
And you have seen this storm cloud looming.
Yeah. You know, I don't think this is a shock to any of us. We believe that it's extremely short-sighted. And we were anticipating sizable cuts, but the complete elimination of the NEA, the NEH, you know, and other key departments is just extremely short-sighted. As I was saying to you earlier, for every dollar the National Endowment for the Arts invests, it's a $9 return. And it is, you know, such a small percentage of the the federal budget. We're talking about 0.004.
Yeah, they'll be able to build 0.004 feet of wall with that money.
Exactly.
You could use
right
that
to put it into perspective. What this is going to do to a state like Connecticut is, you know, the ripple effect is going to be devastating. If we think about the investments we're making directly from the Connecticut Office of the Arts, we get our federal allocation is just shy of $800,000. The state matches that. We get a little bit more from our general fund allocation. However, the NEA also directly funds arts initiatives across the state. So we get, there's several million more dollars being invested into Connecticut. But when we aren't funding the organizations that produce the kinds of programs that we know are having impacts, like, you know, Music Haven in New Haven, like, you know, the Center for Arts and Creativity, like the Real Artways here in Hartford, like the, you know, the list goes on and on. What happens is that's going to affect tourism. 65%, more than 65% of thousands of people surveyed have stated that they come to Connecticut for arts and cultural events. When we cannot fund the people that are producing the events, we will be impacting our tourism directly, because we know that people come here to see the great offerings that the state has, and it's, you know, amongst all of our amazing arts and cultural organizations. So, as I said before, I mean, the work that we're doing here, you know, we reach, most of our money goes to underserved populations. We're reaching into rural communities, and to support initiatives that we are seeing a direct impact in the health sector, obviously on education. We're looking now at, like, with Judy Dorwin and what she's doing with Women at the York Prison and programs in the criminal justice system.
And jobs.
I mean, yeah.
As Connecticut and the nation and the mantra seems to be, let's return people to work, let's build more jobs and allow people to explore careers in areas where they're gifted or have expertise. This is taking a segment of that population, as you indicated, however fractional, and perhaps it is in the short or long term going to create a an eclipsing of some positions.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a new study that the New England Foundation for the Arts is about to share. We have the first kind of the draft version of it now, but it indicates that we have about 59,000 creative industry employees in the state of Connecticut. So that would include not only our teaching artists that are in our schools, but it includes, self-employed people that are doing kind of arts and creative work. It includes folks working in media and marketing. But 59,000 is a large number, and our last economic prosperity report 5 years ago, we're about to get the new one in June, showed that the nonprofit arts sector in Connecticut is an over $600 million industry. And that's just the nonprofit sector that we surveyed. So we're talking about, you know, 3,000 of the 11,000, you know, that exists. So the arts mean business here. And so, as I said, this is just very short-sighted. So we don't give up easily in the arts. So,
right.
And I don't think he's going to have an easy time passing this.
No. And it's always the starting point. It's funny because I was sitting with Ben Barnes last night listening to him talking about the impacts of the state proposals on municipalities. Now, switching gears and dragging things back a little bit more local, does this latest news out of Washington compound an anticipated challenge if the governor's proposed budget passes?
No, you know, with the Connecticut Office of the Arts and the governor's budget right now, the governor has proposed a $600,000 increase for the Connecticut Office for the Arts. We haven't received an increase in, I think, over a decade.
Oh, okay.
And so we are really excited about that because $600,000 to us, I mean, similar to the national funding for NEA, I mean, we get such a small percentage of the state's budget, right? So our general fund allocation last year was a little bit under $1.5 million, but we're reaching every single region across the state of Connecticut with that $1.5 million. And I can tell you that the need that exists out there is operating support for our great institutions to be able to do the work that they do, because folks aren't offering grants that cover operating expenses. So this $600,000 for us would help us to really continue to invest in that much-needed support for operating for organizations, small, mid-size, and large across the state. So I'm really feeling positive, and I'm hopeful that the legislature, we have great supporters of arts and culture. I hope it will go as according to plan.
Yes, me too. Well, and with that in mind, before we move on and chat for a while in a very concentrated way with David Green down at the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, tell me a little bit about your relationship with Fractured Atlas. I understand that you were a strong proponent of this Space Finder initiative.
Yeah. Fractured Atlas is a fantastic organization, and I've worked with some of the senior members of their team in the past, having a background in curatorial and arts administration in Boston and Connecticut. I knew them in my previous life, and I've been very much a fan of the kinds of services that they offer to artists nationwide. Space Finder is of particular interest to us because coming out of our new strategic plan, which really focuses on what we're calling READY, relevance, equity, access, diversity, and inclusion, really helps artists and creative professionals find spaces that suit their needs. So it's kind of like supporting the DIY movement, right? So if an artist wants to do an exhibition, and there are young artists that just graduated from a university and they're not exactly ready to be submitting, you know, a portfolio to a blue chip gallery somewhere, they can find a cost effective space to curate and host their own exhibition. Same for, you know, small performing arts groups that might want a black box space. Same for, you know, meetings to discuss whatever they would like. I just think it's really important for us to take a stock of the spaces that are available to artists and list their prices so artists can just have a resource that they're like, well, I don't have to wait on this organization to fit me into their schedule.
Excellent.
I'm in charge of my own schedule. So we're very excited about empowering artists that way.
Great. Well, we're going to hear a lot more about it and how the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County is going to put Fractured Atlas to work and the Space Finder Initiative in that segment of the state. In the meantime, we covered a lot of ground in a very short amount of time. Christina Newman Scott, I really appreciate you taking the call, and I hope we'll be able to get together for something a little more lengthy in the near future as things start to develop both in Washington and in Hartford. To help orient our arts community and those who want to be part of it to what the future holds for the arts here in Connecticut under your leadership. So thank you, Christina
Newman. Thank you so much.
Yep, Christina Newman Scott is the Connecticut Director of Culture. And we will be back right after a brief break to talk to David Green, who is with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, to hear more about Fractured Atlas and the conference that brought Space Finder to Fairfield County. Christina, thank you for calling in. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the Event Guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. And if you work or volunteer with a state nonprofit, you've still got a couple weeks to visit the site and apply for one of our 2017 Love CT Foundation grants. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Boquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. If you're seeking information how to plan for future long-term care costs, you'll want to attend a upcoming public forum on long-term care insurance being held April 4th at the Hall Memorial Library in Ellington. The program starts at 6, and the state of Connecticut, in conjunction with the Hall Memorial Library, will present a free 2-hour session open to the general public where no insurance sales will take place. You will, however, benefit from this forum if you're between 40 and 65 years of age and have or plan to have assets of at least $75,000, excluding your car and home, when you retire. To register for the program, call 800-547-3443 or get all the information you need from ctpartnership.org. David Green joins us on the line now. He's the Director of Programs and Membership for the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County. We received a notice a short time ago that the Cultural Alliance has become the lead partner working with the Connecticut Office of the Arts to launch Spacefinder Connecticut, putting Connecticut on the map with New York City, LA, San Francisco, Nashville, Chicago, Boston, and other metropolitan areas by offering a free statewide space database to support the creative economy. Very exciting news, David, especially in these days of tentative funding and unclear future for the arts, both here in Connecticut and across the nation. We appreciate you joining us. Now, this all kind of sprung from a conference that happened a few months ago. So tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, actually, before that, we were doing a local meeting for the Office of the Arts, a charrette, to help them with their 5-year strategic plan.
And that was almost 2 years ago.
About a year ago. Let's see. One of the issues that kept coming up repeatedly was the sense of frustration from both organizations and individual artists that they couldn't get hold of space to perform, to rehearse, to play. All manner of spaces were either out of reach, they were too expensive, people saw spaces available but didn't know how to get hold of them. So I looked into this and discovered that there was, in fact, this database being run by Fractured Atlas, and had a pretty extensive conversation with them to see whether we could run this amazing-sounding database. But then they mentioned that the price was a mere $5,000 a year, and that seemed to be the end of that conversation. But fortunately, I mentioned it to Christina Newman-Scott, who is really very good news for the whole of the cultural community of the state, very, very plugged into the needs of all of her constituents. And after hearing about it, she agreed that this was something that they could have a big impact across the state for comparatively little money, and she agreed to pay this. So
and excuse me, David, this is also,
we took it on. Yeah.
And this is with the hope or the plan to sort of pilot it and then serve in a leadership capacity, rolling this out statewide.
That's right.
Hopefully.
We agreed to get the numbers up. We agreed to get around 100 listings. And then when we felt that we had a nice, robust set of listings, that we would then talk with our fellow alliances around the state to encourage them to do the same. So basically, we're very close now. We've got just over 60 listings, and we are one of 9 arts councils and alliances that work with the Office of the Arts. So we will We are developing a plan now to go one to the other to show them how to use this new system.
Great. So in the last 3 or 4 minutes that we have with you, why don't you explain to us how this whole thing is going to work to the benefit of both the artists and the audience?
Well, it's a very Fractured Atlas has worked on this database for quite a while, surveying artists and arts groups about the kinds of spaces that they need. And so the forms that anybody renting a space has to fill out can be very specific in terms of the kind of sprung wood floor that a dance studio has, or the kind of lighting that an artist studio has. So that when an artist or a performing arts group go into the database to look, they can specify the kind of space pretty easily that they're looking for. And already we have a tremendous range. We have a couple of artist studios available for artists to work in, right through to the entire Klein Memorial Auditorium and the Westport Country Playhouse, all of which have small to really enormous spaces that that they can rent to the to constituents. So I think this is another very useful tool. It's free to both listers and users, and it's a tool that we're developing as we're trying to deal with this sense of how to develop more creative spaces for what we call the creative economy.
So then is this exclusively for established creative arts spaces, or does this also have the potential to support or buffet economic development by providing spaces that some may have never before deemed appropriate for
absolutely
pop-up?
Yes, yep. Absolutely. I'm pleased you mentioned that. Yes, but one of the points of this is to sort of open up space that churches or community centers are not using very much, but that could be used very effectively by local groups or individuals. So we're reaching out to banks, to community centers, to churches, to schools, to see if there is space there that they can either rent or even donate. You don't have to charge for your space. You can just say that you're happy for another community organization to use it. So it's basically about surfacing all of the space that's out there.
And that latter concept is so fantastic, because as we heard from Christina, there may be escalating challenges for groups that might not otherwise be able to continue their work to find donated space or very, very inexpensive space to continue in some sustainable way, even if they lose or lack significant funding. So this is truly an excellent prospect, and with the added benefit of perhaps putting arts in unconventional spaces and former commercial locations where that are perfectly outfitted for that, but may not have ever been considered. So in the last few moments that we have with you, can you just let folks know where they could go to learn more about this, either on the web or perhaps, give you a call to find out how they could get some further assistance through Spacefinder?
Sure. I'm happy to take any calls. Yes, the number is 203-212-6894. And you can go online and look at Connecticut, spelled out, connecticut.spacefinder.org. And there you'll see the spaces that we have already listed. And if you want to list your space, you can just click list your space and register your organization. I'll have a look at the listing approve it, talk to you if it needs some work, and then up you go.
Excellent. As the lead partner, the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County is introducing Spacefinder Connecticut first in its jurisdiction down in Fairfield County, and hopefully then we'll be leading the charge to bring Spacefinder across Connecticut to benefit the other thousands of different arts initiatives that could benefit from it. We want to thank David Green. He's Director of Programs and Membership for the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County for bringing us right back home with this fantastic opportunity for the arts. David, best of luck with it, and we're going to visit with you again and catch up and see how you're doing in a few months. So thank you for being
terrific.
On the
I look forward to that. Thank you, John, very much.
Take
for
care.
The opportunity.
Yep. Well, before we get to the end of March, we needed to check in with a brand new friend and medical authority here on the award-winning For the People. As you may know, March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and it's very, very important to talk about this at least once or twice a year. On our program, March is the time for a conversation about colon cancer, and information is power when it comes to this type of deadly disease. So we want to get the facts, help you make healthy choices, find the right screening tests, because they can make a big difference and possibly save your life. So we are with Dr. Robert Wenick. He's Vice President of Population Health with ProHealth Physicians in Farmington, and I trust he will become one of our newest in our arsenal of fantastic resources. We've chatted for a few moments before we turned on the microphone, and we're ready to go. So, Dr. Wenick, from your perspective, first of all, let us know sort of the overarching mission of Colorectal Cancer Month and its awareness building initiative.
Great. Well, thank you very much for inviting me today. It's a great opportunity. March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, but for most primary care physicians, every day is Colorectal Cancer Awareness. It's a great time to raise the awareness about the importance of screening. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in the United States, and it's the third most common cancer in men and women. Each year, there's about 135,000 new cases, and nearly 90% of those new cases can be avoided by screening and early detection. So we take this as a great opportunity today.
So my understanding being of the age is once you hit around 50, 55, if you have no family history or no driving medical reason behind getting it done earlier, that's when you should start getting colonoscopies or perhaps some other type of screening or multiple types of diagnostic testing. But is that something at this point in at least a man's life that we need to pursue on an annual basis?
So there are many different types of screening for this disease, and it is important that we get one of those screenings. I think it's been said that the best test is the test that's done. So throughout the country, we're only screening about two-thirds of eligible men and women, which is far too low. About a third of adults between the age of 50 or older haven't been screened at all. That's about 22 million people. And because of that, we need to find better ways of getting the word out. I think the screening tests available vary, but the gold standard has always been the colonoscopy, which is that thin, flexible, lighted tube with a camera on the end, able to look at the entire colon, look for polyps, which are precursors to colon cancer, and remove them painlessly during during the session. The problem with that is that patients often don't like the preparation where they have to clear out the bowel with strong laxatives. There are other screening measures as well that are quite successful. Colorectal screening by looking for samples of blood, what we call fecal occult blood testing, can be done safely and simply at home by collecting small stool samples on a card, or further DNA testing, which is a stool sample sent into the lab looking for the DNA of cancer. There's also CAT scan colonoscopy, which also requires you to have a laxative effect prior. But these are all valuable screening tests. Colonoscopy can be done every 10 years if it's normal. The fecal occult blood testing have to be done annually, so that's a little bit different. And the DNA testing of stool with a Cologuard test is every 3 years. So, again, getting one of those screening tests is really important. If there's a reason you're objectionable to one, there are others, and that's a great discussion to have with your primary care doctor to find out which test is best for you.
Mm. So when you describe the gold standard, the colonoscopy, where do you stand, if I may ask, in terms of preference or effectiveness compared to the cult test or the DNA test?
They are effective in looking for blood in the stool or DNA signs of cancer, but the problem is when they're positive, you will then need a colonoscopy to look inside the colon and find those potential areas of cancer or polyp growth and have them removed.
And is that the same with the scan?
Same is true of the colonoscopy scan, the CT scan. Once you find an abnormality, it needs to be confirmed and documented with a colonoscopy.
And I guess the advantage of the colonoscopy is once you're on the table, despite the uncomfortable or sometimes unwanted or unpleasant prep, it's one and done. Provided there is no biopsy that comes back positive, these polyps can be removed all during the same course of anesthesia?
That's correct. So it's a very simple and well-tolerated test. The prep is objectionable to some people, but speaking from a guy who's had this procedure done twice, it's fairly simple and innocuous, and over time while you're on the table, if it's completely normal, you don't have to go back for 10 years. If you do have polyps, they can be removed painlessly at the time of the procedure and evaluated.
And provided those polyps all come back negative for cancer, does it hasten the follow-up colonoscopy just because polyps were initially discovered?
Yes, so if you have a potentially precancerous polyp, which we call an adenoma, then you will be required to come back in most cases in 3 years to have a repeat colonoscopy.
Instead of 10.
That is correct.
Very good. Folks, if you're joining us, we're having a very important conversation about colorectal cancer here in March, Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, with our new friend, Dr. Robert Wenick. He's VP of Population Health at ProHealth Physicians in Farmington. So, Doctor, let's turn our attention here to Connecticut. Statistically, the American Cancer Society across the nation has indicated more than 135,000 people will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer, and sadly, almost half of them, 40% at least, will die from the disease. How are we doing here in Connecticut, or maybe even more acutely, how are your population of patients doing?
So we try to screen 100% of patients, obviously, but in Connecticut, we're only successful with about 65% of patients being screened. Again, that's far too low, and I think the addition of in what we call informed decision-making, having patients come in, discuss other options besides colonoscopy, is an effective way to increase the amount of patients who get screened for this disease. It is just so important because there are so many cancer deaths that occur from colon cancer each year that are largely avoidable.
And we've kind of been talking kind of man to man about this, but it is an issue for women as well. Is there a kind of a proportional or a disproportionate concentration in men or certain ethnic groups?
Not at all. Generally speaking, the disease doesn't discriminate, affects both men and women equally, and impacts all racial and ethnic groups. So it is an important screening tool for everyone.
And if colorectal cancer is detected, is it, as you initially described it when we were talking about the colonoscopy, is it just a cancerous polyp in the colon or rectum area, or give us a little bit more of a detailed explanation here on this early Sunday morning while people are having their breakfast and stuff, because darn it, this is important.
Absolutely. The entire idea behind the screening is that most polyps start, most cancers of the colon start as a polyp. And if those polyps are removed before they become cancerous, you have thwarted the potential effect of colon cancer. If you find early colorectal cancer, it's far more curable through surgery than if you find it late. The problem with this disease is that if you wait for symptoms to occur, it's too late. Symptoms often occur when the disease is already advanced, and the prognosis for cure is much worse at that time.
So does that suggest that once blood or DNA is detected in a couple of those less invasive screenings, the cancer may already be advancing significantly?
Not necessarily. The sight of blood, either rectal bleeding or having a positive Cologuard or stool test, raise the potential and risk that you might have the disease, but oftentimes it's associated with hemorrhoids, infection, inflammatory bowel disease, other more benign diseases. So you shouldn't be afraid to come in and be tested. And certainly it does not mean you have cancer just because you have those symptoms.
Okay. Let's go on to risk factors. Alcohol use, tobacco use, and I see long-term eating of red or processed meats are all factors. And then being overweight and or physically inactive compounds the risk. I want to key in on the red and processed meats point, because I know a number of people that say, all I eat is chicken and fish, occasionally pork. I avoid red and processed meats completely to help ensure that I don't get something like colorectal cancer. But it is not abstinence is not required.
That is correct. I think the most important risk factor that we didn't touch on yet is family history. If you do have a family history of colon cancer, a sister, a brother, a parent, you are at a significant increased risk of developing colon cancer yourself, and those patients need to be screened earlier. But for the general population, absolutely, risk factors such as obesity or having a sedentary lifestyle, smokers, alcohol overuse, and high saturated fat diets along with red meat do raise your risk. So red meat, you want to reduce the eating of excessive red meat and processed meat, such as salami and bologna and other products. You don't need to eliminate them, but you need to have a healthy diet, mostly of fruits and vegetables, chicken and fish, with occasional red meat or processed meat is fine.
Okay. And in terms of going back to family history, these days, perhaps a lot of individuals that are approaching prime age, their late 40s, early 50s, they may not have a complete picture of their family history due to the absence of one or maybe even both biological parents, although that probably represents a pretty narrow sliver of potential patients. What would you recommend for individuals who may not necessarily be able to have a comprehensive idea of their family history?
Right. So it's more common than you think, because lots of patients don't necessarily know about prior histories, and a lot of times the older generation doesn't like to talk about problems that occurred within the family. So a lot of times we are flying a little bit blind as far as family history goes. I think it's important that we still screen those patients as recommended, starting at the age of 50, not treat them at high risk unless we have an absolute knowledge that they're high risk, but make them aware of the signs and symptoms to look for that might be signs of early cancer, as well as make sure they screen appropriately starting at 50 and not later.
Okay. And at what stages what stages of the cancers point at discovery demand certain advanced types of protocols in terms of surgery or even radiation or chemotherapy?
So your best bet for survival is to have early disease before the cancer has had a chance to spread. But once the cancer spreads internally, deeper into the wall of the bowel, or has blood invasion and starts to spread systemically throughout the body, your cure rates are far less. Currently, the treatment that we use for advanced stages of colon cancer, besides removing the cancer surgically, would be chemotherapy. But chemotherapy is not highly effective against this particular disease.
So radiation is the preferred...
radiation is not used for this disease.
Oh, chemotherapy.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Okay, very good. So then to wrap things up with you, Dr. Wenick, let us know where folks can go to get more information so that they can be fully informed and do the right thing here when they have hit the sort of crossing point of being in their early 50s.
So I think it's a great idea when you hit 50 to have that conversation with your primary care physician. We believe that is the most excellent resource. You can also find information available online through the American Cancer Society or the Centers for Disease Control. But the important thing is, in order to improve your chances of detecting early or preventable colon cancer, is to get screened. Pick a screening test that is right for you. Have those discussions with your physician and find the screening test that makes sense for you. Get screened starting at 50, and you can hope to live a much healthier life and avoid this disease.
Excellent. Well, March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. That means March is the time for a conversation about colon cancer, and I'm glad we had the opportunity to have one with you, Dr. Robert Wenick, Vice President of Population Health at ProHealth Physicians in Farmington. Great to meet you, and thanks so much for a very educational interview, Doctor. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.